Okay, welcome back. And this is another serious subject, aren't they all these days? I want all of you to pay attention to the skies this summer especially. There have been a few days when the skies are magnificently blue, they're clear. But most of the time, they are a silvery gray patina. No clouds, but they're not blue. Now, if you look at the horizon carefully when you're in an airplane, you'll see that there's a brown layer. As far as you can see, that's not what we're talking about here. That brown layer is smog. And that brown layer, by the way, literally expands around the entire planet now. It's not as thick in many places, but smog, burned hydrocarbon emissions, hang low to the ground all around the world. What I'm talking about occurs at 20, 25,000, 30,000 feet sometimes, and lower. We're talking about geoengineering aerosol sprays, otherwise known as chemtrails. When you look up at a sky and it's silvery gray in the daytime, it's full of aluminum, barium, and other metallic items that in many cases may be as small as nanoparticulates. We don't know for sure. This is a hugely important story. God only knows how many people have had their lives cut short by this, have had their lives and health compromised and ruined by this geoengineering, this insanity. We don't know. But we are so thankful for a very few people who have been fighting this, none more heroically than Dane Wigington. And Dane is back with us tonight to bring us up to date on the latest with this one of many insane environmental policies, if you can call it a policy, that the powers that be seem intent upon carrying out until the last man. Anyway, hello, Dane. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Jeff. I'm very grateful that you're willing to address the issues you always have, the most critical issues.
Oh, you bet. This craziness about people literally growing up, in many cases, this has been going on since 95, 96, and that's going on a bit of time now, 16, 17 years. There are teenagers who have never really seen very many clear blue skies with beautiful white clouds in them.
And actually, that's the truth. I'm sorry. You know, that timeline, Jeff, we can push back much, much further, actually, based on the available data that we have. We believe conclusively now that these programs actually reach back as far as the early 50s, even the late 40s. Now, at a much, much smaller scale.
Correct.
Yeah, but, the ramp-ups were in the years that you mentioned. But there was activity at a pretty significant level going on even back into the 60s where we have documents from NASA, mm-hmm. 80 pages long, that outline budgets in the hundreds of millions of dollars even in the 60s.
There are some Hollywood motion pictures from the 50s and 60s which actually do have, you can see chemtrails in the sky.
Correct.
Yes. You've seen them.
Correct.
It's pretty damn disgusting.
We think that, that part of that reason was, that because it was not very widespread then, not like now, but we believe perhaps that since they thought they could play God with the weather indefinitely, that they were making an effort to condition the population over the long run by being over some of the bigger box office films even back then by intent.
Really? Well,
because the frequency in other films from that era and not so big box office films.
They don't miss a trick. Jeez.
They're not there. They don't miss a trick. And they're in kids' films now. They're in animated films, Cars, Over the Hedge. So, a lot of effort has gone into
there. You've seen them in animated films, too?
They are. Oh, they're in some of the Disney films. Again, I know that Cars, Over the Hedge, and there's several other ones that they are absolutely in those animated films.
Well, you mentioned Disney, and I always feel a twinge of tragedy when Disney is mentioned. If Walt were around, my God, what he would think. This is too much. They push, as you know, homosexuality, pedophilia, geoengineering. They push all kinds of evil agendas now in Disney films. It's a tragedy for all of us. We lost a great thing. By the way, there's a book out, Walt Disney's War Against Hollywood or something like that, and it's fascinating reading. Okay, my friend, tell us what the latest is. And if I may, let me start off with what I prefaced your visit with, and that's the idea of nanoparticulates. I don't know that that's been proven. You can't see them. But let's just suggest that there is a nano factor to this geoengineering. It's smaller than molecules, of course. Do they aggregate to form molecules? I don't know. I would say this is probably a molecular issue. But how do they handle these small, tiny little objects and get them to disperse so thoroughly and so efficiently? Do you have any idea of the mechanics involved?
Well, first, on the size of the particles, I'll get to that point in 1 second for people that a general overview, and I'll lead right into that question. That the reason I've dedicated the last decade plus of my life to this particular issue, and because there's many issues that we face, quite simply, the data indicates clearly the gravity of this issue makes it a superseding issue to all others, in my opinion. I think the data backs that up. If this issue is not dealt with, nothing else will matter. And we are much further into a corner than people realize. The damage that's already been done, not just by geoengineering, I mean, human activity as a whole has certainly wreaked havoc on the planet, but geoengineering appears to be the single largest climate-disrupting factor. Mm-hmm. And they're lying, Jeff, about the temperatures. And a lot of data across the board are clearly being falsified. We're seeing temperatures being underreported by about 4 or 5 degrees. Many think that the opposite is true. It's not. Every location we check, we're seeing temperatures quite radically underreported, meaning it's much hotter than we know. And we are much further into the curve, and the climate is much farther into the process of disintegrating than people understand. So that being said, on the particles that are wreaking havoc on all life forms, including us, we did do a test. I paid a significant amount of money for a test at a very specialized lab with a rain sample that we knew contained aluminum. And this test was supposed to be good down to 1/10 of a micron. We knew it was packed with aluminum, but they couldn't pull out a single particle, meaning the particles were smaller than 1/10 of a micron.
Wow. So that's a shocker. That tells us a lot. Okay, great. Good for you for doing that. Wow.
Well, it's certainly the smaller the particle, the more lethal they are.
Yeah,
and now,
sure.
After a recent trip to Stanford, I met with a bioscientist, nanoparticulate specialist, and now the aluminum has been directly linked to not just all the diseases we already know, ALS, Alzheimer's, autism, also type 2 diabetes and obesity, directly related to aluminum exposure. So
keep in mind what Dane is saying. Excuse me, Dane. Keep in mind what he's saying. This is really important. A virus is a half micron, maybe a micron. 1/10 of a micron is damn small. Now, the smaller the particle, the easier the particle can go into the body, into a zillion other places that it can hide out in, stay in, try and detoxify yourself from something that small. It's not easy. Larger particles, easier to get hold of and bind and get them out of the body. The little stuff, by definition, what you're saying, this is a massive health catastrophe.
It is. The damage that's already been done is unquantifiable, and it's all bioaccumulative. So these materials are building up like a plaque on our cell receptors. And as you mentioned, this is important for people to consider because the experiment is always changing. And the skies over Northern California, and we're understanding much of the Northwest above us, are clearer this year. That the white, silvery haze is there, but the in-your-face trails are significantly less, at least to date this year.
Yep.
But the blanket spraying over the entire eastern Pacific is much worse. And we're posting satellite photos on Geoengineering Watch about every day, and the grid patterns are so profound, so in your face, they are literally covering the eastern Pacific from Baja to the Aleutian Islands and out thousands of miles. It's a virtual blanket. And they're trying to keep the sun's thermal energy, amongst 100 other things they're doing. When I say they're trying to do one thing, that doesn't mean they're not doing
anything. Oh, no, there are many. You're right.
Many. But the thermal energy buildup in the ocean, they did this so extensively going into last winter that it appears they virtually knocked out the El Nino that was predicted.
Huh.
And that thermal energy in the ocean, the caps now, we're probably going to have an ice-free Arctic this year. The cap is melting at a 2-to-1 ratio from underneath. It's melting twice as fast from underneath as above, so no matter how much they geoengineer on the surface, they're trying to keep that heat buildup in the oceans. But again, all of this, I don't mean to make it sound benign, everything they're doing overall is extremely counterproductive. They're halting the planet's hydrological cycle. They're derailing all the natural systems. So whatever at face value they have convinced themselves is slowing down warming. I mean, this is the pharmaceutical cure. Let's kill the planet to save it.
Wow. Okay. If you look under Dane Wigington's name, you'll see right there, three lines down, blanket spraying of the Eastern Pacific. And that's a link. Take that link. Dane sent me the picture today. It's a satellite photo. And if you look at that, look off to your left and take a look and see what you see. It's real clear, real obvious. We've seen some astonishing satellite photographs of Kem Spring.
This is what shuts off the hydrological cycle, Jeff, for the western U.S. And if people look up the U.S. Drought Monitor, they'll see something very profound, something we haven't seen ever before historically, where there's a line from north to south about in the middle of the country. The western half is locked in extreme drought. Fires, the soil moistures are at record low. And you go on the other side of that line, it's deluge and record rains. This is exactly what we'd expect with the kind of disruption geoengineering
exactly.
is known to cause.
Looking at that picture, looking off to the left side, if you need a microscope or a magnifying glass, rather, do get one. Take a look. You'll see, if you look at those white streaks, you'll see a hatchwork. There's a perfect crossing hatchwork there. It's rather wide, but they're squares. Yeah. It's all there. Okay. Wow. Blanket spraying of the Eastern Pacific, right off our western coast. That's why we're... Yeah, go ahead.
For an update, Jeff, I mean, again, if people want to get the most recent update, they can go to geoengineeringwatch.org on the front page. It's an updated live presentation I did for a large group in Northern California.
Yeah, I have that also under your name. It's a video.
Okay.
And
cool.
I featured that as well on my homepage. Okay, back in just a minute with Dane. Okay, back with Dane Wigington. What I'm trying to process in my mind is, he said something that is profoundly important. He said these tiny 1/10 of a micron size pieces of aluminum, barium, and other things are forming plaques over the membranes of cells. Not every cell, but they can easily and freely transit the blood supply. Remember, a virus which can transit the blood supply, it's easy. These are 1/10 the size of viruses or smaller. They go through the blood supply, they go through the veins, they go through the arteries, capillaries, right on down to the cells. I'm not sure that the cells can't uptake them, frankly. Maybe they can. We don't know. If they're that small, maybe they can penetrate the cells. But this is something that has been dreamed up by mad scientists, and I don't know where it's all made, where it's manufactured. That really doesn't matter. Lato, you have a comment, I can tell, Dan. I got another question. Go ahead.
Well, on that point you made, Jeff, on just how far into our systems these particles can penetrate. And again, this test we did could not identify anything as small as 1/10 of a micron. So we don't know how much smaller they were.
Yeah.
We'll soon be posting, in I think two segments, the interview I did with this bioscientist professor from Stanford University who elaborates on much of what we're talking about. So we will have that posted on Geoengineering Watch sometime soon. It's being edited now.
Send me a link.
I will.
Yeah, it's sure. Very, very, very important. When I looked out 2-3 years ago, and we live in the same neck of the woods, I get up sometimes in the morning at dawn's first light, so to speak, and I would look up, and to my east, kind of overhead, a little bit off to the east, and as far as I could see, it looked like Venetian blinds, stream after stream after stream. And then with a half an hour or an hour to pass after that, they would further dissipate, move away to the east. So they stopped that. Now they've moved way offshore to the west. So this stuff comes in the late afternoon, the early evening, overnight, depends upon the onshore flow of air. And I'm not sure how much is measurable and what your sampling techniques are, but we do remember the few local television news stations which did in fact collect rainwater and did do the analysis and did find horrible things in there. What is the easiest and most efficient way that you measure either precipitation or the air? Because let's face it, this stuff is in the air. It doesn't necessarily have to coalesce and fall down as precip.
It is in the air, but air tests are very difficult to do with particles this small. We bought a very expensive air filtration system right from the manufacturer that they said would we'll be able to detect submicron sized particles, or at least about 1 micron. And we had no success with this because the median for the filter is so fine that it continued to suck that filter right into the mechanism. And you know, you have to, in order to have an accurate air filter, you have to be able to measure exactly how many cubic feet of air you took in to gather that amount of particulates.
Understand.
So quite simply, it's so specialized, what we've had to resort to for anything on an air test is simply, it's not a quantifiable test, but a wipe on a fine surface of glass so you can see what might settle down in the course of a day or two. You can't really quantify the cubic feet of air that came from. But bottom line is, there is absolutely positively no question, there is a mountain of metal raining down on us. It's building up in all of us. And again, what I want to stress, Jeff, to your listeners is the immediacy of this situation. We're not talking about something that's going to unfold over the next few centuries or the next few decades. It's here now, and I believe so immediate that it is perhaps directly connected to the, 2.2 billion rounds of 40 caliber hollow point they've ordered and so forth. This one issue alone, amongst the array of issues we face, is of such gravity that I believe people of every political stripe, we're already seeing this, once they realize they've been a part of this grand and lethal experiment that has cut all of our futures short and perhaps brought us all to the brink of extinction on planet Earth, if these programs continue, I think that this is the global game changer. And when people, as they find out, and they are finding out, this will change the entire complexion of what we face. The cryosphere is imploding. I don't think they can hide the fact that we will probably have an ice-free Arctic this year. And many people think, and this is critical, they think that everything the power structure done is completely completely thought out. Mm-hmm. They're doing everything exactly the way they want. I would argue that, because with geoengineering, it appears ever more that they are flying by the seat of their pants. No pun intended, that they are simply, again, playing weather whack-a-mole. And as this thing spins out of control, they're changing the experiment. We believe Project Lucy is already underway. That's an acronym. They're using the globe's ionosphere heaters to actually try to, what amounts to nuking the atmosphere with opposing frequencies to try to degrade the methane that's already building up there. And as you said, you're in the same neck of the woods as me. How dry is it here, Jeff? I mean, the trees are dying. The ground is parched. These particles are desiccant.
Well, let's talk about the trees in just a minute or two. We've got a break coming up here. But first, the heat. This is the hottest June I can remember.
Well, it's breaking records. And again, even those records are being underreported. They're really breaking them by a much greater margin than what we're seeing. And we believe also that they're perhaps creating a lens effect in certain areas that intensifies that heat in order to create high pressure, in order to spin the jet stream in certain directions. So it's just lethal from all directions. The havoc they have wreaked, the damage they have done, cannot be undone. I mean, our best bet is to try to stop these programs and let the planet try to respond, but we are late in the game, and people better get up off their backside and try to help us bring this issue to light. It's up to all of us, and we can all do a lot of good if we simply shoot the flaming arrows of credible data to groups, entities, organizations that would care if they had a clue.
Okay, indoors, HEPA filters help?
To some degree, but again, only when these particles coagulate. That's one of the reasons, according to internationally recognized geoengineers like David Keith, that they use aluminum, alumina, because those particles don't coagulate very readily. So,
or they repel each other magnetically, electromagnetically?
There's various properties with aluminum, but they don't attract each other, and so they don't coagulate nearly. I think the coagulation rate is 1/4 that of sulfur dioxide, which is what you hear.
Interesting, so, standoff. So, okay.
Unless they coagulate, you can't filter them out.
You can't trap them.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't.
They're too fine.
Wow,
that's not encouraging.
No.
Back in a minute, we'll continue our conversation with Dane Wigington. Please click on his name. Go to the website. It's very important. Lots of data there. For you folks who are still sitting on the fence, we invite you to take a look at the video documentary, the video interviews that are up there as well, and give this some good serious thinking. All right, hold on. Back after this. Okay, and we're back with Dane Wigington. Let me ask a question here of all of you. Have you had, those of you who understand geoengineering, have you had the health quality that you're used to having, or have you felt kind of lethargic, a little maybe depressed, often upper respiratory and sinus problems, kind of heavy breathing that makes it difficult to get out and do? This is a common thing I hear from people. You don't feel so good anymore. And the part of the reason, of course, is that your body is being doused and impregnated with all these metals. And to chelate them out is not easy to do. What do you know about chelation that works or can help? Well, you mentioned, and I've always loved HEPA filters, but I had a hunch that the filter might not be fine enough to catch these things. And I was right.
It's definitely not. And on the chelation, again, I'm not a physician, so I don't want to give direct advice, but what we have been told and what we practice and what seems to be effective, there's zeolite, some diatomaceous clays, cilantro, and there's some products I think you have advertised in your show that could be good chelators as well, Jeff. And then the basics, calcium, vitamin C. I mean, if your body is lacking in its essential minerals.
Well, you got to have magnesium, potassium. Yeah. And most Americans are deficient in one or both, especially magnesium. Curcumin is a terrific thing to take, by the way. Curcumin,
With those supplements, if it can, if you have everything you need, you know, some of the supplements you mentioned, then your body is less apt to substitute some of these toxic metals in their stead. But the bottom line is, no matter what we do, we have to stop the source. And as you correctly said, there's nowhere to hide from this. There was a study done, I think, in 2010 on 1,000 whales from around the globe, the most remote oceans of the planet, packed with aluminum. There's nowhere.
Oh, really?
To hide.
Oh,
yes.
That, I'm sorry to hear that.
They decided at the last minute decided to test for inorganics, and the term that was used in the study was jaw-dropping levels of aluminum. So,
good God.
We can't hide from this, and we simply have to stop them. For those that believe this isn't happening, again, we now have videos sent to us by a great site in Europe, Tanker Enemy, great guys that run that site, and it's KC-10s, KC-135, up close behind the nozzles visible. You can see them spraying, turning on and off. And on that note, for some breakthroughs we're having, I mentioned to you off the air, Jeff, that we have, I think, four pilots now that we're going to be videotaping interview here.
Well, they better be damn careful. I mean, I'm glad they're doing it, but, you know, Michael Harrison, they don't mess around. They kill people. So.
They do, and these people know it, but they also know that all of us are on the end of the plank right now, and we can just fall off the end, or we can turn around and start screaming. And
Are these spray pilots, or are they just people who have observed?
They're retired. They're pilots. They're retired military pilots that are that are simply, they don't know that they were actively a part of these programs. Two are KC-135 personnel, but they are acknowledging that what we see in the sky is not a condensation trail. And now, just tonight, I got another email from people in the UK that have told me they've been contacted by a group of pilots there that can't remain silent any longer. So, you know, again, there's so many people that know these programs are going on. Academia, I spoke to NOAA scientists, USDA, USFS, or U.S. Forest Service, if the dam breaks, it will break from so many directions, there will be no stopping it. And we have to reach that point because we don't have tomorrow. This is unfolding now. The cryosphere is imploding before our eyes. The gravity of our situation is far beyond what most people are comprehending at this point. That's why we're focused on this issue. This is paramount to the hole in the bottom of the ship. Anything else we do would be equal to polishing the deck of the ship while the ship goes to the bottom of the sea. We have to deal with the priority here first, and the House
is
literally
burnt. We've got a treason of, I don't know, the Congress is full of traitors. Treason is the word. Betrayal, there are a couple of exceptions. Where do we go? There's no leadership in D.C. That's
dumb. I don't think we'll make any headway that way. I simply believe that if we bring this issue to the light of day so that the mainstream media isn't showing us 24 hours a day of the Zimmerman trial while, you know, all hell's breaking loose around the globe. If we could simply force this to the light of day, I think that so many people who don't understand what they're doing with these programs would defect. They would not be able to carry out this insanity anymore. And I did speak to a KC-135 pilot. It's been about 2 years back. Didn't know what he was doing up there. When he went back to ask questions, the latest secondhand information I got back from him, that he was medicated behind a desk now. So that's what happens when you ask questions. But, I believe it's so compartmentalized that our brothers and sisters in the military have no idea what they're doing, mm-hmm. and we need them mm-hmm. to figure out what they're doing
and to no longer participate. If we don't hang together.
We have to. You know,
we hang separately, and they don't mess around.
They don't.
This is very, very serious, and not a joke, and this isn't hyperbole. And you know what's happened? We've almost become desensitized to horror and tragedy and danger now. It's in every aspect of the media. It's in the news. It's everywhere you look. Death. We see bodies. We see the... And so to bring something of the nature we're discussing tonight up to a level of the importance it deserves with the public, with our listeners, is not so easy to do. Now, you're doing a great job. This is a great audience. I think it's the best audience in talk radio without question. I've said that for many years. But the average person has been so desensitized to danger, predictions of catastrophe. They get over it. They just don't even react anymore. So to get those people energized is not easy to do, and that's hard.
It's not easy to do, but I believe we're at the point now, also what has kept people from taking action is they believe somehow that they were in a place where they wouldn't have to face these issues.
But there's no escape. You made that clear. None.
But now that's becoming clear. And again, even the shredded ozone layer, which we haven't talked about, certainly a direct result of geoengineering. It's burning the bark off of trees, burning the leaves off of trees. We have leaves on maple trees down here, Jeff, that were twice the size of your hand several years ago, and they've been burnt to the size of a quarter now. You can't escape this.
They've been burned in June.
In early June. Actually, it was even late May. They were burnt to the size of a quarter.
They never grew.
No, and the agencies are paid to ignore this, and we're now getting some help from some congressional people that are going to, I think, force the USDA to answer some questions. But the bottom line is this: there is no hiding from this. People can make their voice heard now while there's still time, or they can go down with the ship. But this is unfolding now. But if we all pull together, people use social media, everyone with the access they have to help us shotgun the data out, we can make a difference.
Well, you're doing the work. All I have to do is go to your website. It's all there and spread it around. You mentioned how whales were just jaw-droppingly loaded with aluminum. In the not-too-distant future, like in another year or two, they're going to be jaw-droppingly loaded with radiation as well. That's a given. We know how much water is going into the Pacific now and how much of it is falling into the Pacific from the mass incineration of radioactive materials by all major Japan urban areas in their public trash incineration systems. That is the most... No, and no one said anything. Nothing in the UN, nothing. They're throwing this stuff up into the air, and it's coming over here. It's in the water. It's going to be lapping up against the West Coast. It already is. Radioactivity has been measured in the pine needles in many of the trees up and down the West Coast. And UC Berkeley, which was doing some good work in the beginning, has all but shut up. No more results from their testing. Okay, be right back. Okay, talking to Dane. We talked again earlier today about pine trees. I love trees. You love trees. Most of our listeners love trees, except those who live in the desert, which is fine. But trees are really suffering badly from this aluminum barium compound. It's not a direct application as much as it is. It goes into the soil and it's uptaken into the plants. And the plants get overdosed with it. It's bioaccumulative. It's the same thing as radioactivity. And they start to die. I'm not sure if they're dying from without or from within. It's probably both. But you mentioned, and some of you will know this, pine trees, when they're young, if they start throwing a lot of pine cones, that means that they're in severe stress, and they think they're going to die. And so they're going to throw these pine cones off in kind of a last burst of energy to try to procreate and to protect the species. That's what they're doing. So if you see a pine tree, a young pine tree, loaded with little pine cones, you want to make sure you get your plant fertilizer, nutrients into the ground as quick as you can. Pine trees tend to be slow communicators, so they don't uptake it in one day like a broadleaf will. So it's a very important thing. And you've got a lot of dead pines down there. Some pictures I saw.
We have loads of pines. They're firs. They're dying by the day. And as I mentioned to you off the air, Jeff, our fir trees this year in this region, about 95% have gone to cone. And I believe many of those are past the point of return. And the trees are actually respirating this material in addition to being exposed to the root system.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
I mean, it's a very bad cycle. And we're seeing some of the greatest die-off, even in the riparian areas where the trees have the most water, but they have the most runoff and the most toxicity there. And on that note, one of the most apathetic parts of this equation is the quote-unquote environmental groups, environmental scientists, if you will. And I had a very short debate on the phone with Simon Donner. He's a globally recognized climate scientist from the University of British Columbia. This was about 3-4 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't last long because they unplugged me as I tried to pin him into a corner.
Did they?
Which they wouldn't have. They took me off the air. But the bottom line is, you know, here Simon Donner says on the air that he knows for sure that they are not spraying. Now, any scientist could never make such a definitive statement without lying. So, you know, I encourage people to send the flaming arrows, get credible data, and rattle the cages of all these environmental groups that you can find, because right now they are truly one of the most apathetic parts of this equation, because they have so convinced themselves that they're paid, bought, sold, and paid for, again, as we know with the universities. So, you know, they need to assist in exposing the truth here and not try to get the general public to bury their heads in the sand, which seems to be their task right now.
Well, the general public often doesn't need too much encouragement to do just that, unfortunately. There are too many things that they can go to. The TV, sports, and all the rest of it.
It is. But when people approach these supposedly recognized global experts who then tell them definitively that this absolutely is not happening, well, he's either a fool or a liar, or both.
Or both.
And in this case, you know, there's so much of academia in that camp. I mean, I've absolutely been appalled. In fact, I was told off the air in an email by one of these climate scientists, and I'm quoting, unless or until geoengineering is recognized and acknowledged in one of their peer-reviewed journals, it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
It's not a reality.
See, that's what's wrong with academia.
That's right.
These people are supposed to be on the front edge, brave, going where no man or woman has gone before. That isn't the way it works.
Not the case.
Au contraire.
It couldn't be further from the truth. That they literally, unless it somehow is in one of their completely filtered out power structure ordained manuals, it doesn't exist. And that's why this elephant in the room could be so massive without their acknowledgement. But again, it's not fitting under the rug any longer. We're going to have a website to identify some of these quote-unquote scientists and the positions they've taken, so that the public at large will know on the record what they've done, what they've said, and so there'll be some accountability.
Accountability. Now, there's a novel idea.
It is, truly, isn't it?
In this time.
But at this point, again, the species extinction rate today, we're in the sixth great mass extinction. We're losing up to 200 species a day.
A day,
based on the latest figures. And the respiratory mortality between 2005 to 2010 went from eighth on the list of mortality to third in a five-year period. We have chronic sinusitis. It's literally epidemic around the globe. I mean, the red flags are everywhere. A 10,000% increase in autism since 1975, and they can't figure out why.
Aluminum, definitely involved in all kinds of dementia issues, whether it's Alzheimer's. I suspect autism as well. Anything that impairs the normal neurological processes upon which we depend to be able to think and be cognitive have to be related to an overdose of aluminum. They've got to.
It is. And then when you have, you know, to give you an idea how far off base these quote-unquote scientists are, when people like David Keith and Ken Caldera state that if we could just deflect 2% of the sun's incoming rays, 1 to 2%, it would eliminate the greenhouse gas effect, at least in the short run. The official figures for global dimming, we're at 22% now. 22% of the sun's direct rays no longer reach the surface of the planet. So clearly, something's totally wrong.
They've been that effective.
That effective, and it's still not slowing In fact, it's although they can create these short-term cooling anomalies, which we see
doing. No, it's exacerbating it. I understand.
Overall,
I'm seeing similar stories, yeah.
Making it much worse overall. And so they continue to stoke the fire while they're holding the lid on the kettle, you know. And these guys are flying by the seat of their pants. And in fact, there was an exchange, an email exchange, between David Keith and this bioscientist professor from Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
Where it became completely clear that David Keith knew nothing about the human immune system nor the effect of these nanoparticles on it. And that's how in the dark they are with their quote-unquote experiments.
Just amazing.
It is.
And they act like they know it all.
They don't.
Just
in
amazing.
In fact, the professor from Stanford was absolutely livid toward him. And she sent out, to her credit, she sent out a red flag warning to about 150 of her colleagues around the globe, some of whom responded back. I was CC'd all those emails, and they said they've been studying this contamination, this heavy metal contamination. They had no clue where it was coming from. And the last emails I saw, that there were several universities globally that were now going to embark on connecting these dots, and we hope we see something actually surface from these.
That's
locations.
Fascinating. So they were onto it. They knew there was there was metal issue in the soil and in the water. They didn't know where it was coming from. Look up, folks. Look up. Wow.
Exactly.
They have been at this. How many tankers does it take to do the West Coast? You know, we're on the West Coast. A lot of folks listening are. You want to run, I'd say, five or six tankers from San Diego to Seattle or B.C. to see San Diego each day. A couple of trips back and forth. That's really about all you need, isn't it?
Well, we see in some days much more than that, actually. And the mathematical equation for the stated goal of 20 million tons of aluminum nanoparticles annually, and that was stated on the record by geoengineering scientist David Keith, that could take as many as 600 fully loaded KC-135 tankers every single day.
All right, hold on. This brings up the obvious question. Are they or are they not, in your estimation, using Jet A to carry and transmit and disperse this stuff? Jet A fuel.
No, commercial
jet fuel.
No, we don't believe this is being dispersed through the fuel, through the engine. This is payload disbursement. There's quite simply far too much material.
All right.
You know, we're seeing so much material it's changing force for pH is 10 to 12 times toward alkaline. We have patents for powder contrail generator. This is absolutely, we believe, a payload disbursement. That's why you can see them shut on and off so clearly.
Oh, yeah.
And I just got an email from a pilot confirming that our hypothesis has been right. Commercial aircraft are being used, and most of the pilots know, in his words, but he said, to speak of this is a very bad career decision. That was his words in the email I got. So, again, Project Cloverleaf, which I know you've outlined in the past, and it appears to be exactly what's going on. The non-profitable commercial routes kept going with much smaller payloads, but the amount of aircraft in total involved with these programs appears to be staggering. You know, because they're desperate, Jeff. They're quite simply desperate. You have sea level rise right now, based on the latest figures that we've seen from credible sources, not the sources who downplay everything. But right now, if all greenhouse gas emissions could be stopped, including the methane release triggered by the geoengineering and all these feedback loops, 70 to 100 feet of sea level rise baked into the system right now. Right now. So
that's catastrophic.
It's cataclysmic, and the latest data I saw from the Arctic methane group, the Arctic scientists, that based on the methane release right now, we could be looking at 10 degrees C of temperature rise in the next 10 to 15 years.
This is methane hydrate.
Well, from the methane hydrate is a primary source, yes, which is flooding the atmosphere now.
Mm-hmm.
It's flooding. We have this on satellite data imagery. Methane is like a layer of glass covering the planet, and this is another area they downplay. The significance of the methane.
Oh, they never talk about it. I know.
They never do. And if they do, they say it's 20 times more potent, the greenhouse gas. But that's over a 100-year time horizon. Over a 10-year time horizon, the latest data shows that it's 130 times more potent. So it's literally like covering the planet with a layer of glass. It's happening now, and they are trying desperately to hide it. I don't think they can much longer.
My audience is asking me to ask you two questions. Where are all the tankers based, and why doesn't somebody get any pictures of them?
Well, I think people have, you know, the Pinal Air Force Base in Arizona. There's another Evergreen Base in Oregon, but we believe they're flying out of everywhere. We've had reports of them flying out of Pinal Air Force Base. It looks like they're doing some conversions still of the aircraft to tankers. at George Air Force Base in Victorville, California, but there is so much traffic covering so much of the globe, they simply mm-hmm. have to be flying out of way too many locations for us to even begin
that,
to
that,
identify.
That suggests, of course, a lot of trucks moving a lot of material.
It does.
And the other question, where is this stuff being made? Not that aluminum, barium are very hard to make certainly in the amount being used, but the size requires some technology.
Technology that's available now, and again, why does aluminum go through the roof after the climate conferences when everybody signs under geoengineering? Because they've all bought into it. So thank you for covering this issue, Jeff.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Dane. Stay in touch. We'll do it again.
Have a great night.
You too. Dane Wigington, and there you go, the latest and the truth, and we'll be back.